Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McHusing, and it's time for the Know Your Foe episode for the Browns game already. We're still recovering from that horrible loss against the Chiefs, but let's look forward. Let's set our eyes forward for a moment as we talk to Jake Burns of Browns Film Breakdown, one of our favorite guests, one who's on here every year, knows the Browns inside and out. Jake, how are you doing?
Ken, I'm good. I'm great. I'm happy to be here. I feel like you and I have been, it's like year four maybe doing this now. We've been having some fun over that time frame. It's a fun division rivalry. It's turned into, as the Browns have started to get a bit more competent. You mentioned the heartbreak of week one. We'll talk about it. Browns fans and structure here in a pretty similar spot, a rough week one loss. So yeah, we're feeling a lot of the same way, but you know, like you said, you can't really go back and rewrite what happened. So the sort of sentiment on our side is the same thing. You pick it up, you move on. And so marathon happening here, not a sprint.
Yeah, there you go. So the Browns, as I think most people know, lost 17-16 to the Bengals. Forget where that game was, in Cincinnati, right?
No, that was in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's bad. Okay. Let's start off in this turbulent offseason for the Browns. I don't want to spend too much time on the Myles Garrett contract, but it was a big, I wouldn't call it a distraction. Maybe for the fans it was in terms of what was going on. But what was your take on the path and the eventual outcome?
Yeah, good question, Ken. I think it's hard to gauge whether Miles was pining for more money. Like, he was going to get money no matter where he went, and the Browns were always going to pay him too. So, like, it is a we watch what happened with Micah Parsons, which is not entirely similar. There's a younger player, more of the appropriate age to make the type of trade that you saw Green Bay make, but like, the Cowboys don't really live in the financial way the Browns do, which is a lot of the void years pushing cap down the line structure. The Browns, long story short here, is that the Browns, if they would have traded Myles Garrett and the contract or the cap ramifications of doing so, would have actually made it hard to field a team of 53. Mm-hmm. So he could want out, which I think he did. I do think he wanted a fresh start at 29, still in his prime. And I think he was fed up, and I still think he's kind of fed up with the lack of an answer at quarterback. But like, I digress. That's a different wormhole conversation. But they didn't move him because they just couldn't. And if they did that, they would ruin the next 2 years of even fielding a competent team, and then the cap ramification of him on top of Deshaun Watson. So I think what happens here, Ken, is it's a lesson to specific players. This is a small percentage of players who are the elite of the elite, about when you tie yourself to a franchise who operates this way, about, hey man, you're really tying yourself to this place. You cannot get out, because Miles' agent and Miles had to know. They're not dumb people. Like, they know how the cap works in the league. So he's doing this, he's out in front of it. And like, I think it gets to the point where the Browns say the same thing to him for the 17th time, which is, hey man, we can't trade you because it kills us in these five ways. We can't do it. We'll pay you top of the money, or top of the market money. Now, we've since seen two players surpass that dollar figure, but you know, the Browns do a lot of things well. I think one of them is paying their people early. There's also a slew of things they don't do well. So like, Miles was always going to get paid. I think he did want out, Ken, long story short. but they couldn't do it. The way they structure these contracts, like Grant Delpit, and you know, I know Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is not playing this year, but Denzel Ward just restructured. There's a lot of moving parts they do because of Deshaun Watson, and it was regardless of whether Deshaun was working out or not. They're now in a spot where they know they can't push his cap down the line in another deal. So they're just like up against it. How do we navigate what is ultimately probably going to be a $70 million Russell Wilson like cap hit for a year that's coming with Deshaun Watson? It's coming. Right.
Yeah. And the Browns, in terms of total void year borrowing, void years as a percentage of the cap, are at about 140%, if I recall, last I looked. Yeah. So it's scary. That's national debt level. A lot higher than it actually is. It's about what the U.S. national debt is as a percentage of GDP.
That's fair.
Let's take a look at the draft here for a minute, and we'll finish with the quarterback situation because that obviously the last draft pick went a quarterback. But take us through quickly the draft picks.
Yeah, they selected at the top of the draft. The biggest move, and we'll see. You know, it takes years to solve this. They move out of two. They get a pick for next year's one from Jacksonville. They move back just slightly to five. On the surface, I like the deal. Ken liked it at the time, even though I really liked Travis Hunter. I understood at the time gathering a pick, more ammunition. The only way the Browns get out of their current, whether they can be a long-term contender or not, is if they strike. They get a lotto ticket at quarterback. They find the same Baltimore lotto ticket in some place in the first round at quarterback, and you find that answer. So getting more ammunition to do that was the crux of the deal.
So they'll have the Jacks pick and they'll have their own pick. Right. And one of the primary competitors for the top quarterback in next year's draft will be the Pittsburgh Steelers, who probably will have two number one picks to trade. It seems like the Browns are in a better position to move up if that's what they want to do.
It should. Yeah, it should be that way. I mean, I think Pittsburgh is going to win enough games to still do what they do and get to 9-10 wins. And ultimately, that's, again, a whole other conversation. But I do think you're right about that. The Browns will have more ammunition to do that. There's another who else? Somebody else had another. Was it Seattle? Who else? Someone else scooped up a second first round pick because they let the Falcons come up and take that pick. Was the Rams maybe, Ken? I can't totally remember, but someone else. There'll be a couple for doubled up first round pick contenders in next year's draft. So, but that's the plan. Cleveland just needs to give themselves more ammunition to be able to do something meaningful at quarterback next year. A lot to be decided on whether that will be there to do. We'll see. They go Mason Graham at five, a big swing on a defensive tackle. That's a fifth pick, is a huge investment. I like Mason. He's been fine so far. I think there's a lot to like. He's a refined pass rusher or a run defender who is not overly physically imposing, but is a very cerebral player at the position, understands how schemes work, how to cheat things, how to get where he needs to go. So he's been fine. I like him early on. The next pick was the additional second round pick that they gained from the trade with Jacksonville. That's not the next. Next one's Quinshon Judkins. I think it's been pretty well documented what's gone on there. He seems to be closer to a resolution than ever. Case was dropped. He's meeting with the NFL today as we speak. He's not at practice today. They expect him back tomorrow. He's currently on the exempt list for guys who didn't participate in camp. So they've got like 2 weeks to navigate that. It's up in the air, Ken, if he plays this weekend. But he's obviously hyper-talented. They need him. He's a fun football player. Other than we'll leave all the other stuff as it is, but good football player. Then Carson Schwesinger, they took with their Jacksonville pick at the top of the second, who looks really good, Ken. I mean, athletic profile, the traits from college tape are transferring the preseason. And when I was up there at camp, pretty much every open session, he's just good. He's not Luke Kuechly, but he's got the same demeanor. He's got like that stoic, film study based, quiet leadership type who's just in the right place at the right time, is hyper athletic. He's got that linebacker thick neck. Like, he just is good. He so far is really strong return on what he is. And he was really good in week one. And then they go Harold Fannin in the third round, who is had a fantastic debut, a hyper-productive Bowling Green tight end who I considered the Isaiah Likely to David Njoku and Mark Andrews situation. It looks to be a similar setup there. They want to use the Browns were 50% 12 personnel, and we can dig into those details with you a little bit here, but they want him on the field. He's their fifth guy in their personnel pack. They want your five best guys out there. He's their fifth guy. And I mean, you could probably claim he's the fourth guy, like totem pole wise. So he's been a nice return. They surprised folks by going double up at running back with Dylan Sampson in the fifth round. We'll come back to the two quarterbacks, but that's the other player they took in the class who started week one and had 8 catches out of the backfield for 65 yards. And, you know, Ken, you study draft guys like I do. It's hard to gauge Tennessee prospects because that offense is so weird, that wide veer and shoot stuff that Heupel's doing at Tennessee. Browns are kind of living in that Cedric Tillman space, getting him to be a productive player. So you never know what to expect because they just don't do a ton of NFL stuff there. But it was really encouraging. A lot of motion, a lot of movement, put him in the slot a little bit here and there, made a nice catch, shoestring catch on a third down. A second and long. A really good debut, making people miss in space. You know, I just want my backs to make one guy miss. If you can make one guy miss, you're doing your job, and he was doing that all day long. So nice debut for him. Two other guys, the two other picks they used, Dylan Gabriel surprised a lot of people in the third round, late third round. I like Dylan Gabriel. I think he's got a chance to be at minimum a fine, really fine backup with a chance to be a Brock Purdy type of quarterback if things go in the right direction for him. Like, I really see the vision of anticipation with him. He sees the field way better than you would think a sub-6-foot guy sees the field. He uses the middle of the field exceptionally well. There's a lot to like from the leadership standpoint. He's a better athlete than people give him credit for. Won't play much. The hope is he doesn't play much this year at all because they got Joe, and you know, you work through that, and you can just be patient with these guys. But there's probably a world where he is going to play late this year. And I don't know when the Browns and Ravens run into each other again, but it's certainly possible you could see him at that point.
So this is a very interesting, obviously, nexus of problems here. And one of the things that drafting, by the way, kudos to the Browns for sticking to their guns and waiting to take Shadur. But it's obviously a very good pick. I thought the Browns had the best draft in the division, as even though I think the Ravens players are good. I think the Browns had a fantastic draft in terms of setting up themselves for future value with the trade with Jacksonville and with the I like the Mason Graham pick. I thought maybe it was a slight reach at number 5. You've hit, you know, you've kind of hit on that, though you didn't use that word. But the Gabriel Sanders thing is the one that really surprises people. And you know, Shannon Sharp and many others are saying, should this be a year the Browns just hand the keys of the car to one of these rookie guys and try and figure out what they have, try and make it an on-field competition?
I totally get the sentiment. It doesn't miss me. Their theory here is investing in that position continually until you find a guy, right? You don't, 49ers don't know Brock Purdy's going to work out until you put him out and it works out, right? You have Trey Lance, but you don't stop investing in that position. I know that's not a foreign concept. It's not some grand league wide, but the Browns are trying to do that. And like, they loved Gabriel in the process, the buildup. They met with him. They kind of sneakily met with, I was lucky enough to talk to Will Stein, his offensive coordinator, who I just had known from the, long story short, he was at where Baker came out of high school in Texas. He was coaching there. So I knew him from then. He has shot through the coaching ranks and is now like a premier offensive coordinator at Oregon. So I had a good conversation with him, and he loves Dylan. They've loved him from the moment of go. And like, the Browns were up there. Like, they brought everyone up to see him. No one knew it. They brought everyone there to see him. So they love him. And to your point, the Shadur thing, they just said the value at this point is hard to pass on. It's so hard to pass on if he is what some people like to consider him to possibly be. I think, Ken, once the league ruled him out as a starter, nobody wanted to deal with the backup stuff.
Yep.
They didn't want to deal with it. So the Browns are one of the few teams situated to say, yes, the noise of him being a backup is difficult to navigate and tricky to navigate, but the upside swing for a place that needs an answer is worth it. That's why he's a Cleveland Brown. I don't have an answer on whether that ultimately becomes something. He still has some of those traits that came up in the preseason where he drifts in the pocket, he holds on to the ball too long, the processing is slow, and everything I gather from people inside the building and more, Ken, is the whiteboard stuff, the playbook knowledge, the nuances of getting in and out of it just is something Dylan's better at initially, which for an older guy in multiple college systems should not be a surprise.
Okay, so if you think about how the draft, the Browns have set up their draft capital, it looks like they could reset again next year and get draft capital pushed from 26 into 27 if they wanted to do that.
Yes.
But for 26, they're set to make a big move at quarterback if the right guy is there. with that the first pick of the draft, frankly, because I think they've got the ammunition to go get it if they as it looks right now. They probably will not have the pick themselves, would be my guess. I think this team is too talented to finish at the very bottom of the entire NFL.
To answer your last question, because I didn't really answer it, which is like, those rookies seeing the field, Ken, is probably dependent on how well they do to start. Let me be delicate with this. The Browns are in a weird position. They're not the Saints in this situation, where the Saints have such a different varying stages of veterans. Like, their guys are not, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the Saints, but they're veterans and a lot of their young core. You can see what they're doing. The Browns are living in a world where they have Myles Garrett at 29, Denzel Ward at 27, Grant Delpit at 27. And if JOK was healthy, he'd be 24, 25. Like, they have a good nucleus that you can't just tell your guys, we're going to punt the season by playing a quarterback, trying to work out two rookie quarterbacks taken in the third and fifth round. That's a dangerous world to live in with veterans who want to win. You obviously they know they need the right quarterback to go the places they want to go. But how do you get in front of a core that has a lot of talent? Joel Bitonio is going to be a Ring of Honor player. Jack Conklin, Wyatt Teller, and say, hey, guys, yes, Joe has been the best player at camp. You have a familiarity with him, but we're going to actually just try to work through rookie quarterback growing pains this year and try our best and stick your thumb up and think your guys in that locker room are going to buy into that. So that's where I think, Ken, the conversations around the table in Berea are like, we just have to get ammunition to do the aggressive thing if we are a 5-6-7 game winner, so that we're not backs against the wall and have no choice here on a quarterback. We have to get some, even if we love, they might have been in love with Travis Hunter to the millionth degree, but they know that the quarterback pathway is the only answer. And if you look at the roster, it's hard to tell your guys, hey man, we're not going to be able to do that for you this year. So just to, buckle up, take it easy and try to lose games. Like, you just can't live in that world. Whereas some teams, it's pretty organic because the talent level's not there yet. So that's the juxtaposition. I do, though, Ken, think organically they do find chances for these two rookies, probably Gabriel more than Sanders, but hell, you never know. The Browns brought Bailey Zappe to Baltimore last year late in the year. You never know. So, like, if the season goes sideways, there's a chance they do get some answers about these rookies, but it would take an unbelievable stretch of games from, say, Dylan Gabriel, hypothetically, or Shador, to make me not want to still get a quarterback in the first round of next year's class. It's early. This could all cater for the group of quarterbacks next year and it turns south. But like, it's hard to move me off that move next year.
Okay. Let's project ahead 3 years. Okay. And who's a quarterback for the Browns in 2028? Okay.
It's a drafted quarterback.
So I was going to ask you to give a percentage on each to Gabriel, Sanders, or a drafted quarterback in either 26 or 27.
Yeah. That's a better way to go about it than my answer. Yeah. I think it's high. So I would say, if I'm putting three guys into the ring here, drafted quarterbacks, probably 65%. Mm-hmm. You're probably 25% on Gabriel. And then that leaves you 10%. It's probably lower on Shador, if I'm being honest.
But it could be five. And then you,
yeah, I would say 30%. Yeah. Cause Gabriel, like when you watch him doing, operate what Kevin likes to operate, how he likes to play the game, the football out of the hand of the quarterback fast, like, he gets it. It's just a matter of like when the real bullets in regular season start flying and like, you got to be able to read more than, hey, they're in cover three and they're staying in cover three. That's preseason, right? Instead of that, where you get a guy who's down in Rob position, he's dropping back and they're playing invert two. Can he read that when he's got that? That's the stuff to see, because the other tools, Ken, are there. It's just a matter of like how efficient and consistent could he be?
Okay, you're on mute here.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, how efficient and consistent can he be doing that? That's the question.
All right, we got to move on because we have limited time today, but that's fantastic detail on what's going on with the quarterback room there. Let's talk about the state of the offensive line. They gave up a lot of pressure versus Cincinnati in that first game. What went wrong?
Well, Ken, they're old. I don't know what other way to say it. Like, they're got, like, you know the names, they've been around, Wyatt and Joel and Jack Conklin and Ethan Posick, who fit in pretty well as a natural replacement for Wyatt or JC Treader. They've been here and they're in their 30s and they've all kind of dealt with major injuries. And it's like, I equate it to, when like LeBron at 40 is picking his spots in a game where he plays hard and where he doesn't play hard. You can't not play hard as an offensive line, but you know what? When you really get into that nasty mauler, rooting out double teams against defensive tackle, they just have they've got wear and tear, Ken. And I think that when you get that over time, and you ultimately know, like, hey, I remember in this situation, I turned a knee here, or somebody slung into my.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything, from stress to sleepless nights, with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit legally.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Just don't think they're going to be as good as they've been, and they'll probably have some good weeks here and there. I actually thought they did a better job handling some of the stuff that gave them fits the last 2 years, some of those twists and exchanges in the pass protection game. But like, it's just a group that's aged. They're not as physically twitchy as they used to be, not quite as core strong as they used to be, and then you have the ramifications of that. So they didn't win the line of scrimmage against the Bengals, which, you know, the Bengals have some talent there. It's not like it's not anemic or anything. I certainly think there are better defensive lines, but it's not like they're defunct of talent. I think Shamar Stewart's going to be a good player, but they won the line of scrimmage. And, you know, when you consider DeJuan Jones as the younger left tackle, has some faults in his ability to consistently hit the top of drop points and cut off the sharp corner, and is, for a guy who's 6'8", 340, is too lazy in the run game for me. I just think it's an average line, Ken. Average to sometimes below, and then they will have their games where they're above. But it's not going to ever be what it was in, say, 2022, 23 area, where they were kind of guys less wear and tear, less serious injuries, and hungry to prove things, if that makes sense.
Okay. Well, sure. Let's talk about the skill position players. You mentioned Harold Fannin's great start, which was certainly part of this. What other bright spots were there on the offense?
Yeah, Fannin and Sampson, which I've talked about, were good. Cedric Tillman is a third-year guy out of Tennessee. Had a really good day, Ken. I think he's got a – he's like 6'2". And some, like, I think if you're trying to kind of find an athletic comp and a physical body comp, like Nico Collins comparison physically, not as refined a route runner and not as consistent catching the football, but I think that's the ceiling. He lost his first season – again, you come into the league and you come from Tennessee and you're split out near the sideline every play. There's so much to learn. He got a chance late in his first year to get some snaps and learn and had some moments, has a concussion, so he misses the playoff game against Houston. Next year, big role. Deshaun Watson is a it's not very good, Ken, so the offense is not very good. And as a result, you don't really figure out a rhythm with receivers. He did find a really good rhythm. If you check his statistical run with Jameis Winston, and you guys saw him in Cleveland last year when you came to Cleveland. A really good game. Like, he can play. He can play. He's got a body of an X receiver, but he likes to play a little in the slot, likes to play a little Z. They move him around. And he was good in week one, created a ton of good separation against tight man coverage. The Bengals with Al Golden, their new DC, like to run man. He was really good. And I'm hoping that's a sign of what's to come with him because they need it. So he's a guy to keep your eye on in this one. He did lose him for six more games with a concussion last year. So I think that's the thing that's, you know, most worrisome for him staying on the field. But he's got talent. Jerry Judy's not his best game in week one, but he's still talented enough to, you know, kind of consistently know where he is and find him. And, you know, the Browns will find him for some big plays here and there too. So that's really your core. They played Jerome Ford in the secondary running back, where he actually out-snapped Sampson, but he didn't come anywhere near the touches. But he's just a very average player. Good speed in the open field, but poor vision, poor contact balance, not a good pass blocker. Judkins will replace him. I don't know if that happens this week, but those are your skill guys. They do have a third receiver. I talked about it. They played 50% 12 personnel. I don't really see why it goes down a ton, Ken, to be honest. They played a ton of that when Kevin first got to Cleveland in 20 and 21 when they had Austin Hooper and Njoku. But they've gone away from it, like the third most 11 personnel last year in the league. So they're going to go way back into the world Kevin's comfortable in, playing 12 personnel. They'll play Fannin a ton with Njoku. And then when they bring another guy on the field, they like Jamari Thrash, who's a second-year player out of Louisville, mid-round receiver, who had a nice camp, only had one catch in the game just because by virtue of they didn't use that role very often. And then they have another young man they took in the UDFA market, which was pretty publicly out there, Isaiah Bond. They're going to try to use him vertically and let him try to lift the lid off defenses a little bit too. So those are your skill guys collectively.
Okay, so this is a really interesting game because the Ravens have typically been the heaviest team in the league since actually Roman got to Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And in this game, they were as light as they've ever been. They only had three tight ends / fullback active, and they played only 1.67 per play, which anybody else hears that number, that's, oh my God, per 1.67 per play, that's like the most in the NFL. Well, the Ravens have been, you know, 2.3 a few years ago. So this could be one of the first games in Ravens-Browns rivalry in a very long time where the Browns played heavier than the Ravens, from what you're saying.
Yeah, they'll use Fannin all over. He doesn't just play Y. He's a slot guy. He got in the backfield for three snaps. He got in as, like, they used him as a wildcat quarterback too. Kind of like, I mean, they used him like Tyler Warren, kind of, is the same type of player where you're putting him in line, you're putting him in YY looks with Njoku in the wing, and you're putting him in the slot. They'll put him outside wide. In the preseason, he had a glance touchdown on a high red zone throw from about 20 yards out. So, like, they'll use him everywhere. They'll put him at fullback and have him be a lead blocker. He's a chess piece for them. So, yeah, he'll be out there a ton.
They'll have to figure out how to deal with him. That may be a Kyle Hamilton assignment in this game, given how that's going.
Be my guess. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Tell us a little bit about the secondary and their current state.
Yeah, they lost Martin Emerson, which is a name your folks should probably know. He started for 3 years. He tore his Achilles late in camp. It was a big bummer because he was in a contract year and high hopes. But at the same time, Ken, it moves Greg Newsome back outside, who'd been in the slot for the run of Emerson's tenure with the Browns. He'd been in the slot, where Newsome in his rookie year was really good outside. And the relationship going forward was like, what's Newsome? They're going to, like, could they trade him? There's been a lot of that going on for a while now, maybe 2 years. And then he's back outside and he was really good, man, like extremely good in week one. And I don't want to call an injury a blessing in disguise, but like Newsome is a very young corner who fits best playing outside, contain roles in the run game, sticking his nose in there minimally to try to tackle. he was good. I think that's the pathway. And if it clears this up for the Browns in a serious way, then I'm open to it. I think I'm encouraged by it because they held Jamar Chase and T. Higgins under 60 yards combined. Like, they were good. Newsom made a play up the left sideline on a fade ball, reaching his hand back through the catch point on Jamar Chase. As good of a one-on-one teach tape play as I've seen. So they are good at the outside corner. They have a safety core they like to play. They like Ronnie Hickman, who's a UDFA from Ohio State a few years back. He's in year three now. They like him a ton. He's gotten better. They play him at the free safety in post position often. Grant Delpit, who's been around for a while now from those LSU teams with Patrick Queen and all of the guys, right? He's a chess piece for them. They'll play him in the slot. They'll play him in the box. He doesn't play deep often, but in cover two looks and predictable pass, they will. But he'll come down and play the slot. Then they'll also play a third safety veteran, Rayshon Jenkins, who's been around the league for a while, Jacksonville and some other locations. So he'll play. On the bench is like a DeMonte Casey, an old AFC North Steelers player. They got some there, but that's the core. When they do want to bring in a nickel, which was not a true cornerback nickel, did not happen very often. I think it's a place of weakness. Cam Mitchell is around, but he only played 9 snaps. They played 6th-round pick Miles Harden in that role, like 19 snaps when they brought him on the field, Ken.
Yeah, it looks like they played a mix of big nickel and regular nickel.
I think they want to live in big nickel because they don't trust their corners to do it often. So that's my hunch.
Okay, interesting matchup option there for the Ravens. Need to hit on the kicker for a minute. I'm going to leave alone the run defense. We talked about Schlesinger and Graham a little bit in terms of what they produced. Schlesinger had a terrific PFF grade, I saw. Besides that, I don't know really how he performed in week one. But the kicker situation, obviously, they missed a very big kick this last week.
Yeah, so they had Dustin Hopkins, who they traded for 2 years ago, who was really good in his first year in Cleveland. Lights out. If I recall, they won a walk-off in Baltimore with him as their kicker, kicking a late win. Like, he was good. He was exactly what you hope for when you make a choice to give up draft capital for a kicker. And then something happened in year two. He dealt with some lower body injuries late in 23. I don't know if that carried into 24 to mess him, but it was bad. He was really rough in 24. They stuck it out because they had a cap hit tied to him because they gave him an extension. And they ended up cutting him this preseason because it just wasn't there. And they ended up eating like $2.5 million to do it. They bring in this Andre Schmidt, a kid out of Syracuse in his college career, kicked a little in the UFL. To his credit, Ken, he was making everything. And to his credit, in the first half, he made everything. They had 10 points on the board. He made a 45-yard kick on the way into halftime, and everyone's happy. They come out. The Browns score to go up 16-14 to start the second half after a long drive. He misses the extra point. Whatever. Kickers miss extra points in the modern NFL. And then just something happened, which is inside that stadium in Cleveland. These kickers get this feeling. I don't know how to describe it other than it just happens there. And they get a chance to kick a 36-yarder, a very short one from the right hash, to take the lead with 2 minutes left, and he pushes it right. So, yeah, he's young. People want to cut him. I get it. You got to give a guy a couple few weeks to try to figure this out. But it's uneven. Ken, the biggest thing about Browns kicking, I think people don't understand, is there's this quarterback jersey that's very popular. They haven't had a quarterback. There's an extensive kicker list since Phil Dawson has left. Like, Phil, they didn't re-sign Phil Dawson for the 2008 season. He's the best kicker in Browns history before or after the move. And they made that choice, unpopular at the time. And since then, they've had like 16 kickers come in and out of the organization. They can't solve it. Can't solve it.
That's like the quarterback jersey, obviously, you're referring to in terms 100%. Of that. So I grew up, Don Cockcroft was the kicker, and he was pretty good way back then.
He had
terrific range.
Very good. Single bar. Right. Love that.
There you go. Yeah. A lot of kickers did it back then. They were that way. Okay, well, let's do what we always do. And actually, before we do this, I want to ask a question that I hesitate to answer, but I know we have a good relationship, and I don't want this to be a black mark on things, but there's a lot of crap on social media going on right now about the Browns fans and some other media stirring up difficulty over the Ravens having their 30th year celebration at home in the opener against the Browns. Mm-hmm. Your feelings on that? Should they have moved it?
Well, what I heard today, I'm not an emotional fan, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask this question to, because, for what you and I do, we just can't live in that world, or you start to get in a dangerous analytical place. But Yeah, I mean, I grew up a Browns fan. I was too young to know the move. Like, I was 6 years old when they left in 95, so I knew it. My dad and grandpa were heartbroken, but, like, it didn't impact me in that way. So I've only really known the Browns since 99. So that's a deeper discussion you and I could probably spend an hour on. But, like, I get why people are bothered. What I understand is that the Ravens said they were doing this for the opener no matter who they played. I believe that to be the case, and I think people don't understand the logistical difficulties of doing such a thing where you want to bring in players, you want to bring in a bunch of folks, you want to bring in celebrations, you want to bring in sponsors, you want to bring in a whole slew of things that takes a year probably to plan. And you know when your home dates are. I think the thing that disappoints me, Ken, is that the NFL couldn't do it. They knew this. The NFL knew this and couldn't help them out. I don't think that the Ravens organization is being nefarious here. Does it look that way to people who want to be lazy and yell? Sure, I get it. And I'm sure that the folks in Baltimore, if you had a chance to talk with the higher-ups making these choices, the VP, whoever, they're like, yeah, this isn't great. But there's just like with anything that you and I discuss, the nuance of it is something that people never want to try to understand. And doing the logistical challenges of like, hey, we're going to bring in 30 franchise legends and we got to get them hotel rooms and we got to do this, we got to do that, we got to have this parade here. Like, it's a lot, and you set it up to do it when you know the weather is going to be best, home game of the first of the year. The thing I think that I would say is like, and I'm not saying this in accusatorily, but like, did the Ravens say to the NFL, hey, can we really make sure the Browns aren't our first opponent here? I don't know. They may have gone up to the NFL office with a banner and done that. I don't know. But I do wish that the NFL could have worked a way to have anybody else be the opener for you guys.
Yeah, Sashi Brown is the president of the Ravens right now. He understands the delicacy of this situation. I would be shocked if the Ravens did not approach the NFL about this before scheduling and didn't think of the possibility of this occurring, because it's a 1 in 8, what 1 in 8 chance, 1 in 9 chance. I guess they have 9 home games, right?
Yeah.
So I have a hard time believing it. Anyway, I'm always glad to talk to people from any of the opposing AFC North cities who aren't madmen, you know, basically about what's going on. And it's I appreciate having that discussion with you.
Yeah, briefly, likewise. Jay.
Let's talk about the best two players in terms of all, one offense and one on defense who match up against the Ravens well.
Well, the offense, it probably is just like, an underlying thing, because you're talking about the massive amount of noise around that whole drama of the celebration. It's the Joe Flacco's coming home, and like I didn't know this until interviews today. He hasn't been back there, period, since he left. So it is going to be, you know, all the funny Stavros videos and all these things that come out. Like, he loved Baltimore. He loved it there. And he talked about it today. And I do think it's going to be just cool. I mean, listen, I think Joe matches up well. I'm not saying, like, I guess it is. Like, I think Joe will present them with some challenges because of how quickly, decisively he operates at that position. And I think he fits. The thing that people don't get is when he came back, is like him and Kevin Stefanski kind of share a brain for that position, man. They really look at football the same way. And when he went to Indy, like he, the fit for him inside of what Shane Steichen does couldn't be any less appealing to me. I never understood that. So there's a perception that Joe can't really do it anymore. He's still doing it. So I do think how he handles the Baltimore defense and what they try to do to mess with him, knowing him as well as anybody, will be very fascinating to me. A huge plot line that I can't wait to watch. And I also just like, again, I'm not rooted in hatred. I just like, you know, watching him go back to a place he loved to play and the history that's there and all that will be cool. Cause I just, again, I didn't know that since 2018 he left. What, in 19 he left? He hasn't been back. So,
Right. 19 after the 18 season. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing to watch. And again, he'll dictate how far the Browns go. I still don't think they'll run it efficiently, Ken. So, if Joe has a good game, the Browns have a chance. If he doesn't, then the line at 11.5, 10.5, whatever it is, makes plenty of sense. So that's the offensive side. Defensively, you could always say Miles every week, but they have a young guy on the other side they like, Isaiah McGuire, who is a fascinating young player, a fifth rounder out of Missouri, really long and powerful, and coming into his own athletically and starting to put together some efforts across Miles that really accentuate how Miles creates pressure. He has a knack for understanding Miles' high side pressure and how quarterbacks react to it. and he plays the run game really well, condenses his side, closes things down, can take on pull blockers. So keep an eye. He wears number 57. He'll play a decent number of snaps, and I think he'll match up well. I mean, I think we've talked about other marquee players on both sides that'll be of interest to your folks, but that's a name your folks probably don't know, but that's a guy the Browns are like year three here for him inside of a fifth round pick. There's an extension to be done there. Like, that's how good he's been and how good they think he's going to continue to be. So Isaiah had a sack and he had five pressures alongside Miles in week one. Did a really nice job against Amarius Mims, the Cincinnati, Georgia product first round pick. So yeah, keep your eye on him. It'll be an interesting matchup.
That's a good choice. Roger Rosengarten, I don't know if you know, had mm-hmm. kind of a tough first week, as I scored it anyway, against his various opponents, but he got a lot of the Bills' good pass rushers on that side with Bosa and Rousseau taking some snaps, and even Ed Oliver, he had to try and block a few times. So I think that's a very reasonable, good matchup pick. Jake, really appreciate having you on. It's always great to talk football with you. Tell folks where they can find your work.
Yeah, it's the same as it's been. Browns Phone Breakdown. We just run a Substack site, so you got an app that comes with it, a community of people in a chat opportunity. And really, Ken, we've done this so long now, I don't know if this has been the same experience for you, because, Browns fans can be a little bit a hard-headed group. But I've had some Ravens folks who follow me because we do these, and I always enjoy those conversations. So, yeah, we don't do much for free because we don't do any ad-based stuff. We're a completely subscriber-based site. There is a daily newsletter we do that is free. So if you just want to kind of side-eye what's going on with other divisional foes, it's just brownsfilmbreakdown.com. You put in your email and there's a little email sent to you every day with some stuff about what's going on in our world. But yeah, I mean, that's about it. And then at @JakeBurns_18 on Twitter, and then the @BrownsFilmBDN Twitter account kind of keeps you on those social media sides.
Okay, outstanding. Highly recommend Jake as a follow. He's one of the most informed Browns people. And that's not only a fan base, but a media group that's extremely good. So saying that means a lot, you know, about Jake. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. As always, I'll just ask you, like and subscribe if you're on YouTube, and tell another person about the podcast. As always, we have terrific growth and we want to keep that up. Tell that friend or show them how to listen directly off the website if possible. Jake, thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.